election 08 roundup from CBS News. I'm Dan Raviv. We're just about there after a campaign that's been longer, more expensive, and with more variety and drama than any we can remember. Election Day is this coming Tuesday. Americans will make the decision. Who will be the 44th president of the United States? The two major candidates, you know this, are the Democrat Barack Obama, senator from Illinois, and the Republican John McCain, senator from Arizona. Traveling with the Republican who's been calling himself the underdog in this contest, CBS News correspondent Chip Reed.
Never delay the if you were to follow John McCain,
we've got to bring Florida home in our victory column.
In the last days of this campaign,
because we're going to win the state of Pennsylvania.
You'd be on what he says is the path to victory.
Thank you, Ohio.
Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Virginia. To McCain's team, they're the big four. But here's the bad news for the Republican ticket. They trail in most polls in all four of those critical states. That means they can't possibly win, right? Wrong, according to the McCain campaign. And here's their argument. Polling, they say, is an imprecise business. There's always room for error. It's what pollsters call the margin of error. Take Ohio. The latest Associated Press poll shows Obama ahead by 7 points, but the poll's margin of error is 4. That means it's possible Obama's real number is as low as 44, and for McCain, it could be as high as 45, putting them in a virtual tie. The same goes for Virginia. In Pennsylvania, McCain would be within striking distance, and in Florida, the margin of error could put him in the lead. And there's another factor that gives the McCain campaign hope: undecided voters. According to polling by CBS News, most of them are white, older, and voted for George Bush. So, the McCain campaign says, if everything goes their way, John McCain and Sarah Palin could be on that path to victory.
That report by Chip Reed. Now CBS News correspondent Dean Reynolds covering Democrat Obama. This report starts with part of the 30-minute infomercial seen by tens of millions of TV viewers this past Wednesday.
We've seen over the last 8 years how decisions by a president can have a profound effect on the course of history.
This 30-minute primetime program about himself and his policies, an investment of well over $3 million.
For the past 20 months, I've traveled the length of this country. And Michelle and I have met so many Americans who are looking for real and lasting change that makes a difference in their lives.
The timing was designed to infuse some new enthusiasm into the waning days of this race, according to his aides. Another extravagant statement by a campaign known for them. His Roman-style convention tableau and his trip to Europe last summer were mocked by his opponents as over the top.
He's the biggest celebrity in the world.
Behind the fancy speeches, grand promises, and TV specials lies the truth. Barack Obama lacks the experience America needs.
Obama's private fundraising has dwarfed McCain's grant from the federal government, and he's played the financial advantage to the hilt, outspending McCain in a number of battleground states where polls now show him tied or leading. The contest in North Carolina is surprisingly close, and in Raleigh, Obama heaped derision on McCain for calling his tax plan socialism.
By the end of the week, he'll be accusing me of being a secret communist because I shared my toys in kindergarten.
One Republican replied, no, communism is when the government makes you share your toys. On Friday, McCain's running mate, Governor Sarah Palin, said,
the far left wing of the Democrat Party is preparing to take over the entire federal government.
Some McCain and Palin advisors say reports of tension between them and their staffs are exaggerated. People in the McCain team had been quoted saying Palin has gone rogue, indicating they suspect she's focused on her own national aspirations for after election 08. Let's consider how McCain and Palin may believe they can win on Tuesday. You need 270 electoral votes. CBS Evening News anchor Katie Couric stood with Jeff Greenfield, our senior political correspondent, at a map showing in blue the 19 states plus the District of Columbia that Democrat John Kerry won 4 years ago.
Obama has a double-digit lead in all of them, which is 252 electoral votes, just 18 shy. When you add states where he has commanding leads, right now at least, Iowa, Colorado, and New Mexico, those states alone put him over the top without even talking about Florida or Virginia or Ohio.
So what does John McCain do if that's the case?
Well, He has to take every state that's still up for grabs. He has to take Florida. He has to take North Carolina. He has to take Virginia, where he's trailing, Ohio, Indiana, Missouri, and then he has to take Pennsylvania out of the Obama column. That's why he spent so much time there. That would do it for him, but it's a very tricky road.
So how does he navigate that road?
Katie, I'm running out of cliches. I mean, he has to throw the Hail Mary. He has to hole out from the bunker. He has to convert the 7-10 split. You pick the cliche, but it's a tough road for John McCain.
CBS's Jeff Greenfield with Katie Couric. The economy became the big topic in this election campaign only about 7 weeks ago with the collapse of some investment banks and the stock market. And the federal government then scrambled to bail out institutions in a mortgage-related mess. Now that federal statistics show that the economy, meaning gross domestic product, is shrinking, which means we are in a recession, CBS News chief Washington correspondent Bob Schieffer comments.
It's almost like nobody hears anything. They just know the economy's bad. They're mad at the people that are in office and presided over it and seem like they want to penalize that party. And that's what's so hard for John McCain right now. He can't find an issue that really gets any traction or really sticks. I mean, he's tried to change the subject from time to time, but it just hasn't worked.
In fact, a CBS News New York Times poll found Americans do have more confidence in Obama to improve the economy if he's elected rather than McCain. We mentioned the half-hour TV show paid for by the Obama campaign this past Wednesday, which got good ratings on CBS and other channels. Bob Schieffer was questioned about that by Dave Ross on Dave's KIRO radio talk show in Seattle.
This is what's going to work in those toss-up states, or is this just to get the people, get his own people to actually show up at the polls? Why would he have a problem getting his own people to show up at the polls at this stage?
Well, I think you're always going to get your folks to the polls. That's always the number one objective, because if they don't show up, then you're not going to win. And I think that's part of what this was aimed at. It's an infomercial. It's a political commercial. But if you look at commercials, then you have to say this one, for what it was very well done. I think it was designed to make people feel more comfortable, if that's the word, with Barack Obama, just as those ads that Ronald Reagan ran were, folks, it's going pretty good here. And you saw those fields of waving grain.
Yes, I love the waving grain. Makes me think of breakfast cereal.
Yeah.
Bob Schieffer chatting with Dave Ross. Later on this special broadcast, we'll have more with Bob Schieffer. Don't forget he hosts Face the Nation on CBS TV and radio every Sunday. Coming up next, the non-presidential contests as we continue with Election 08 Roundup from CBS News. You're listening to Election 08 Roundup from CBS News. I'm Dan Revive. The big headline this coming Tuesday night will, of course, be the presidential election. But what about Congress? The Democratic Party has high hopes. It's held a majority in both the Senate and the House for 2 years now. But the Democrats are going after a bulletproof or filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. They say they'd need 60 votes to cut off debate on any issue. The Republicans pretty much couldn't stop anything. Let's turn to Vaughn Ververs, political director of CBSNews.com. The Democrats hope to go up from 51, I'm including two independent senators, from 51 to 60, net gain of 9. That's nearly impossible.
We thought that it was impossible coming into this election cycle. Maybe not so impossible right now. They've got a number of Republican incumbents on the ropes coming into Election Day, and they have the advantage in a lot of these open seats that aren't very competitive right now. Democrats have done a much better job recruiting coming into this election cycle. They've had more money on their side. It really mirrors what we've seen in the presidential race in terms of the advantages that one party has had over the other.
One notable Republican in deep trouble is Ted Stevens, Republican in Alaska, one of the leaders in the U.S. Senate, but now he's been found guilty on 7 charges of failing to report gifts. He says he's still a candidate, wants to stay in the Senate, insists that he's innocent. The Democrats might capture Alaska.
Well, you can tell by all the Republican senators who have come out and asked Ted Stevens to step down from the United States Senate that they're pretty sure that he's going to lose this race. It was a very competitive race. He's running against a popular mayor of Anchorage, and this is a state that has always favored Republicans simply because of the energy issue, simply because Alaskans don't want to send anyone to the Senate who's not going to help get animals war opened up, and they know the Democratic Party is unlikely to do that. But I think the problems that Ted Stevens has had has overwhelmed that, and he's very, very likely to go down.
If he hadn't faced these charges, I think he would have won re-election. How about North Carolina, where Elizabeth Dole is a big name, but the Democrats think they can unseat her?
She's one of these candidates who has come up as an endangered incumbent here at the end of the race, when she wasn't in the very beginning. A lot of that is probably due to the attention that Barack Obama's campaign has paid to North Carolina, the intensity of the action there. And we've seen that state really narrow all across the board. And Elizabeth Dole is in some ways a victim of that. And in some ways, she hasn't run a great campaign.
But that in great part is what you in the business call the coattails. Obama's coattails, if he sweeps to victory, though North Carolina apparently would not be easy for him. But apparently the Obama campaign has motivated young people and African Americans to register in unprecedented numbers. And if they vote, say, straight Democrat, well, then Elizabeth Dole's in trouble.
That's right. That's part of what you call a wave election. And in those kinds of elections, you start to see incumbents go down who you never thought would be defeated coming into the election cycle. You know, Elizabeth Dole is a good case in point, but also Mitch McConnell in Kentucky, suddenly finding himself in a very, very close race.
And he's the Republican leader in the Senate.
In a very, very Republican-friendly state. But polls have shown lately that he's in a dead heat right there right now and in a real dogfight. So this is what we mean by a wave type of election. Not only do you have an Elizabeth Dole or maybe a Norm Coleman in Minnesota who's in a very tight race with Al Franken up there. These are races that individually these Republicans might be able to win, but if it's the tide is big enough, it could sweep them under.
On the House side, to have a majority, you need 218 seats. The Democrats right now have 235, more than a majority. Where's the betting on that? The Democrats will increase their lead?
Yeah, oh, they will certainly increase their lead. You know, coming about 2 months ago, it looked like anywhere from 15 to 20 seats. But now estimates are ranging upwards of 30 seats Democrats might be able to pick up. And in the House, Republicans are facing the same problems they are in the Senate in the sense that they have more retirements, so they have more of these open seats. Democrats had a better recruiting cycle. They got better candidates in some of these places. And they're suddenly competitive in districts that George Bush won big time in 2004. So you see this tidal wave effect even there if they get 30 seats or more.
So don't forget, there are House and Senate races, not only the presidency. And if it just should happen that on Tuesday night during the election coverage here on CBS Radio, please listen, or at CBSNews.com where you write, Vaughn, that it seems like one man or the other is winning, that doesn't mean don't vote. There's always a lot to vote on down ballot.
Voting is a right and a privilege in this country, and there are not only candidates to vote for, but ballot initiatives in these states. Everyone should get out and go to the polls and vote if they haven't already. You know, early voting has become a big phenomenon in a lot of these states, especially these swing states. We see the numbers increasing there. There's vote by mail. Voting is easier now and registering than it almost ever has been, so there's really no excuse not to get out and vote.
That's Vaughn Ververs, who is the senior political editor at CBSNews.com. Vaughn, try to have fun on Tuesday. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Now to California on the statewide ballot. Proposition 8 to ban same-sex marriage would overrule the state's most senior judges. CBS News correspondent John Blackstone spoke with a former San Francisco mayor who wants a no vote so the public will back the judges.
This ring?
With this ring?
When California's Supreme Court declared same-sex marriage legal, most polls showed majority support around the state. Not anymore.
So I'm really worried.
Willie Brown, one of the wise men of California politics, says the battle over Proposition 8, which would ban same-sex marriage, is raising passions and money across the country.
No question about it.
The passion reaches into normally quiet neighborhoods where Tom and Kelly Byrne put out a yes on 8 sign only to have it answered by graffiti.
I've heard that a lot, like that you were haters.
For the Byrnes, voting yes on 8 is returning marriage to the meaning it always held.
I can't just redefine a word. I can't take the word heterosexual and say that it means someone who has a sexual preference for plants, right? So by the same token, no one else should be able to take the word marriage and redefine it to mean something else that they feel that it should mean.
Jeannie Rizzo and Pally Cooper felt strongly that the meaning of marriage should include them.
There is something really special about a wedding and marriage.
They fought all the way to California's Supreme Court and won last May. Proposition 8 would ban future same-sex marriages.
Now it really is about taking something away from us.
That's not okay with me.
It's an issue that's been raising strong emotions and an impressive amount of money. More than $31 million has poured into the anti-same-sex marriage campaign. But what could be priceless is the boost the campaign gets every Sunday in church.
It's decision time in our lives today.
Pastor Edward Smith leaves no doubt how he expects his congregation to vote.
Our posture is we want to preserve marriage as it has been defined between a man and a woman from the beginning of time.
But on the other side, the campaign to keep same-sex marriage has raised more than $44 million, fueling the TV ad war.
Leave our Constitution alone. Support marriage equality.
This is a campaign where both budgets and passions are sky high. John Blackstone, CBS News, San Francisco.
We'll stay in California and we'll also speak with Bob Schieffer on whether white voters secretly would reject a black candidate when we continue with Election 08 Roundup from CBS News. You're listening to Election 08 Roundup from CBS News. I'm Dan Ravid. If Barack Obama is elected on Tuesday, he will, of course, be the first African-American president. That's historic. By now, many voters don't even seem to notice, but some do. And there's the suspicion of secret racism. Perhaps some white voters, maybe just a small percentage, won't cast their ballots for a person of color. Political scientists have ruminated over that for years, as CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman reports from California.
It was November 1982. Los Angeles Mayor Tom Bradley seemed on his way toward becoming the first black American governor since Reconstruction.
I'm proud of what we've done.
The polls all showed Bradley with a clear lead. Then came the election, and Bradley lost.
It was probably the most crushing defeat I've ever been part of.
CBS News consultant Joe Trippi was part of the Bradley campaign.
Oh, it was horrible. I remember believing that we were up by 10 points. I remember watching it drift away and in the wee hours of the morning losing it.
It became known as the Bradley effect. The theory is simple. White voters will tell pollsters they are voting for a black candidate. Then in the voting booth, they will vote for someone else. David Sears, a political scientist at UCLA, says even today the subject of race and elections is uncomfortable.
It's a hard thing to talk about, I think. For Americans in this era. But obviously it's a central factor. You know, the first time we've had a major party nominee who's African American.
But could there be a Bradley effect in 2008? Again, Joe Trippi.
Look, it's a much different time in our history. It's 26 years later.
CBS News Director of Surveys Kathy Frankovic agrees.
This is a presidential election. People are perfectly capable of telling pollsters who they're voting for and giving pollsters reasons that have nothing to do with the race of the candidate.
Another factor could be pop culture. Americans have watched fictionalized black presidents on TV shows like 24.
Keep me posted, Jack.
Yes, Mr. President.
Darnell Hunt is a sociology professor.
If something like a 24 in which you have an African-American man presented as the president, and he receives the respect that's typically accorded to the president, and he's seen as competent, then over time the public is primed to accept the possibility that this could occur in real life.
Still, there is this warning from political scientist David Sears.
When you get right down to it, he's a black man in a society that has historically had a lot of trouble dealing with race.
We will know soon if there's a Bradley effect in 2008.
When I spoke with CBS News chief Washington correspondent Bob Schieffer about Election 08, we agreed that the color of Obama's skin is hardly ever mentioned. Hey, we all know. So I asked Bob, is race important?
It probably is a factor because it always has been a factor, but we don't know how large a factor it will be, Dan, and that'll be one of the things that we'll be watching very closely. I think we have come a long way. You know, I was thinking when I went to Oxford, Mississippi, the campus of Ole Miss, for that first presidential debate. The last time I'd been on that campus was in 1962, when you'd had riots, 144 people were injured, two people were killed because people were trying to stop one African-American from enrolling in that state tax-supported school. And just think of that. Here you, 40 years later, you come back and you have a debate, a presidential debate on this campus, black kids and white kids working together to make sure it all comes out perfectly. and one of the candidates is an African American. We have a long way to go in this country, but we've also come a long way.
And on the issue of the so-called Bradley effect, that, well, voters might tell the opinion polls, oh, yeah, I'll vote for Obama, but on the day, white people can't vote for a black man. I don't know. Are we past that?
I sort of think we are, but we'll find out. I mean, I sort of think that there is still such a thing. I don't think it is nearly as great as it once was, but there is still a certain amount of prejudice in this country. And I think that one of the things we will find out in this election is how much of a factor is race? How much does it remain a factor? I believe that it is something of a factor. I like to think not nearly as great as it once was, but we'll find out. I think what will counter that is if you have a large vote of young people, a large youth vote, because we generally find that the younger a voter is, the less that person tends to have a racial prejudice. So a lot of that, if there is still that kind of a factor, it will be negated, I think, if you have a large turnout of young people.
CBS's Bob Schieffer. When Obama was on The Daily Show on Comedy Central cable TV, the host Jon Stewart cracked a joke about the Bradley effect, noting that Obama had a white American mother and a black African father.
Are you concerned that you may go into the voting booth and...
I won't know what to do.
Your white half will all of a sudden decide, I can't do this.
Yeah, it's a problem. I've been going through therapy to make sure that I vote properly on the 4th.
Yes, they joke about it. Now let's talk about political colors. Red for Republicans, blue for Democrats on what's called the electoral map. In fact, on Tuesday, we'll have 51 separate elections in all the states plus the District of Columbia. And Chris Saliza, whose page at WashingtonPost.com is called The Fix, notes that we do seem to take as a starting point the red and blue map of 2004. President Bush beat Senator Kerry then. And then we look at which states Obama and McCain may hold or capture from the other side. Chris Saliza.
Barack Obama started this general election saying, I'm going to change the playing field, you know, this whole idea of red states and blue states. I'm not going to buy into that. And I think a lot of people, I'll put myself in that category, rolled our eyes a little bit and said, look, this is just the way things are. It doesn't really matter. But right now, you're seeing Barack Obama spending money in Montana. You're seeing places like Colorado, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, Ohio, all very competitive. Those are all red states. Now, where then does McCain have opportunities? It's very narrow. He has some opportunity in New Hampshire. Remember, New Hampshire is the place that launched his presidential campaign in 2000 and saved it in 2008.
McCain has to have hopes also for Ohio and Florida. In fact, you could say without Ohio and Florida, McCain pretty much can't win.
It's very, very difficult, I think, to put together a map where he wins without Florida. I could see him winning without Ohio. It's still hard. But Florida is such a large state in terms of its electoral vote that if he doesn't win Florida, it's hard to imagine him making up ground. John McCain is on defense almost everywhere. He's not playing in a lot of places that John Kerry won in 2004. Therefore, let's say he does wind up winning Indiana, that polls show very close, or he does wind up winning Missouri, that polls show very close. Well, George W. Bush wasn't worried about Missouri or Indiana at this point in 2004, so it's sort of expected that John McCain would win those states. So even if he does win them, he doesn't really gain anything. He gets himself back to neutral, and that's not necessarily a good place to be.
Those are some of the states to watch. That's Chris Saliza, The Fix at WashingtonPost.com. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Dan Raviv in Washington, and this is Election 08 Roundup from CBS News. This is Election 08 Roundup from CBS News. I'm Dan Raviv. The youth vote could make a difference this year. The Obama campaign especially is counting on newly registered young citizens with indications that by a wide margin they favor the Democrat.
I'm Peter King at the University of Central Florida. Both campaigns have reached out to college campuses.
Thank you. Thank you.
For example, Bill Clinton came here for his first Obama campaign speech, and students like Brian Brandt are all fired up.
I think it's going to be a huge vote out turnout.
Campus organizers say they've registered some 10,000 voters since January. That's one-fifth of the student body here.
I think it's a blessed opportunity to have.
First-time voter Alicia Mosley is trying to get other students to the polls.
You have to just lead by example. So if they see, you know, a few people doing it, and hopefully they'll inspire them to want to do it also.
Peter King, CBS News at the University of Central Florida in Orlando.
Now back here to Washington, D.C., we released a poll we did with UWire, a news service for college students owned by CBS, and with the Chronicle of Higher Education. Almost 25,000 college students were questioned, and almost 2-1 they said they support Barack Obama over John McCain. In a theater at the George Washington University, I discussed that poll with Professor Steve Roberts, also Sarah Hebel, an editor at the Chronicle of Higher Education, Heather Smith, who's executive director of Rock the Vote, and first you'll hear Anthony Salvanto, who works on surveys for the CBS News Election Unit. Subject, young Americans, and the quadrennial question, will they really turn out on Tuesday to vote?
When we talk about voting or whether or not folks will vote, you have to, in some part, think that it will make a difference in your life. And in the poll, we asked if Obama is elected, if McCain is elected, will it make a difference in your life personally? And there's a big gap on that, too. Over half, 55-51% state to state, feel that Obama would make a difference in their own lives. And it's much smaller. It's only about 1 in 5 who think that McCain's election would make a difference for them. So if you think about it in terms of what they perceive as a tangible benefit coming back, that also drives the decision to vote or not.
Out of the 4 candidates for president and VP, Sarah Palin is the youngest. She has 5 kids, including little kids. So why don't these college-age voters relate to her?
Well, if the college-age voters are looking for change, which is maybe debatable, but they seem to think that McCain-Palin won't bring change as much as they think Obama-Biden might. In the poll, it was more than half, I think, thought that Obama would bring change versus 29% for McCain.
So now, Steve, why do young voters want change? They haven't even been around as political animals for very long. What do they know is wrong?
Well, you try to be a senior in college today and start looking for a job. This is a very real, very personal, very direct connection to the politics. And this wouldn't have been true a year ago. A year ago, in all of the polls, Iraq was the biggest issue on people's minds. And that was not a direct concern to a lot of young people. That was apart from their lives. It was something that maybe a college friend experienced. There's no draft. There's no direct involvement. But you're a college student today, if you are thinking about getting a job, if you think about paying off your college loans, I bet in our audience, I would be willing to bet at least half the students out here are looking at $50,000 or even $100,000 worth of loans that they have responsible for the day they graduate. These are enormous, direct, personal connections to the economic situation, and that's having a big impact.
And what I wonder what you find, Heather Smith, Rock the Vote, you sort of know what the young voters are interested in. What would motivate them to vote? Does it tend to be personality, especially in this campaign with a young, you know, new kind of candidate, Barack Obama? Has that turned them on to be interested?
They're fed up with the state of the economy, with the way things are affecting their lives. They're fed up with taking the brunt of these issues, whether it be health care, finding wages, graduating from college with $22,000 average in debt. They are fed up and they want change. And as a generation, they believe they can make that change. And they're looking for a candidate who's going to help them get there. And they see Barack Obama right now about 70-30. We're seeing 70% of young people telling us, he's the candidate who relates to me. He's the candidate who's come out and talked to me about the issues in a way that affect my lives and my life and the friends and family's lives that I care about. He's the person who I think is going to do it. And it's both personality, but it's also the attention that he's paid to these young people that I think has really motivated them to favor him in such large ratios.
Remember also, even though the tilt is to Obama, among conservative young people, Sarah Palin is an energizing factor. Let's not forget that there are strongly conservative young people who support McCain and support Palin and share their view of issues.
Now, keep in mind, this polling was done in states that are considered battlegrounds, where the outcome wasn't clear or is vital to the election. So there are, again, some differences. North Carolina turned out to be somewhat more conservative, for instance. But can these votes really make a difference? So will young people turn out?
There are two factors, I think, historically, why young people didn't vote. One is the convenience factor. And you can now download, thanks to Rock the Vote and other people, you can download absentee ballot applications on the Internet. It's much easier to do it. Many more states are much more hospitable to absentee voting and early voting, so it is physically easier. The other question goes back to motive. Historically, young people did not vote because they didn't have a stake in the election. They didn't pay taxes. They didn't worry about the local schools. They were very mobile. They didn't have a connection to the community in which they were living, and therefore were less motivated. This year, because of the economic issue and the development of these new communications devices, I think what you're seeing is a new community in cyberspace. I think young people are part of a community that did not exist before, a community in which they feel a part, where they don't quite still, they're not paying taxes to Washington, D.C. or Berkeley or wherever they're going to school, but they are part of a community in cyberspace. It's a different sensibility that I think is having an effect.
Anthony.
Well, let me add one thing, too, as we discuss percentages of turnout, too, and even after the election. Keep this in mind. It's not just the percent that turns out. It's the impact that that percentage has. So now we did this poll in battleground states. It's not unreasonable to think any of these states could be decided by a few thousand votes. So even if you see, let's say, well, young people turn out at a slightly lower percent, so let's speculate, than older people, but did they have an impact? And if they vote overwhelmingly or disproportionately for one candidate, you can legitimately say that those votes do swing a state. You can cite states from 2004 where that example would be clear, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, et cetera. So again, think of it more in terms of numbers almost than percents.
Heather Smith.
Yeah, if you ask, will young people vote in November, the answer is unequivocally yes. You start looking at what's happening around the country in terms of voter registration, and there's an overwhelming number of young people have registered to vote and registered to vote very recently for this election. So they are registered, and history says that they will turn out.
That's Heather Smith, executive director of Rock the Vote. You also heard Steve Roberts, professor at the George Washington University. Also Sarah Hebel, an editor at the Chronicle of Higher Education, and Dr. Anthony Salvanto of the CBS News Election Unit. A lot more coming up on this special report, Election 08 Roundup from CBS News. You're listening to Election 08 Roundup from CBS News. I'm Dan Raviv.
Pennsylvania!
By definition, an election campaign is divisive. You choose one candidate or the other, one party or the other, then later talk about unifying the country. CBS News correspondent Jeff Glore in Pennsylvania visited a family playing the card game Uno on the kitchen table, deeply divided over who should live in the White House.
Mommy can deal.
It's game night inside the Klein household near Allentown.
Uno.
But picking a president this year is the real contest.
This is probably the one that stands out the most as far as being undecided.
Both Rick, 50, and Jane, 45, are registered Republicans. The Rick especially believes he has reason to cross party lines.
In 2006, and again just this year, I've been laid off from two different jobs. And I look at it, and it's all happened under the current party.
I'm in the middle, but I'm leaning slightly towards McCain.
Her husband, likely not.
Obama, most likely.
A split decision here, as John McCain keeps swinging for a last chance late round knockout.
Political divisions within a family can be bitter, even destructive. Marie Brenner knows about that, a writer for Vanity Fair magazine. You're the author of Apples and Oranges, a book about your reconciliation with your late brother Carl. Marie Brenner, you're a New York City liberal. He was a conservative apple grower in the state of Washington.
Oh, no two brother and sister could have had less in common. My God, he was an NRA member. Right-wing, Republican, gun-toting guy. I left for the East Coast and became a reporter for a magazine, and we had just a political divide. Everything divided us, and then we learned to listen to one another.
But did you talk about politics, or you and Carl decided never talk about it?
We tried every kind of approach. We fought and fought and fought. We fought screaming matches. He used to call me a New York lib. I used to call him a right-wing nutcase. This went on for years, but we would fight over everything. We would fight over what to serve for Thanksgiving dinner. We would just fight. And often politics, as is often the case, was used as a shield to hide from the very fact that we couldn't listen to each other.
I assume that since your book, Apples and Oranges, came out, you've heard from a lot of other people. who experienced a version of that in their own families.
And it's so hot this particular year. As a society, it would be so wonderful, whoever wins in the transition, if we could somehow learn to just reach across and say, where are they coming from? One of the great strategies, and it works, is that moment of non-reaction. You know, there are pointers one can learn. The first, and I believe what worked for my brother and me, was to learn to not react, to not personalize. You know, of course, this has become commonly said, but if one can just breathe through it and say, okay, that's interesting. How interesting. And stand back from it. It's an actual kind of a great help to try and really listen to where we are and to be able to hold hands and change through the coming really bad months ahead.
Marie, that's not exactly the same as asking a McCain supporter to take a look at Barack Obama and realize what's appealing, or the other way around. That's not exactly the same. This has to do with not reacting and what seeing that your family member, your sister and brother, you know, isn't nuts. They just have their own opinion.
I mean, what's interesting is how the family becomes the great test tube for how we behave often with each other. You know, the experts have a term. They call it the sibling iceberg. How we respond to our brothers and sisters is often what we take out into the world. And you can really feel this year in the political campaign about how people are responding to each other. Do you have a difficult relationship with a brother or a sister? Do they disagree with you? Well, often you'll find that that person is the most argumentative when they get out, and the angriest, and the one who's not listening when they get out. And, oh, boy, is this a time when we really need to listen to one another.
Keep that in mind after a long and divisive campaign, Marie Brenner. Your book's called Apples and Oranges. Thanks a lot for speaking with us, Marie.
Thank you.
Now to Virginia, pretty much a safe state for the Republicans for more than 40 years. So CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer asked Stephen Farnsworth, who teaches communications at George Mason University.
So why is Virginia so important this time around? A lot of other elections, it's been an afterthought.
The reason it's important this time around is that it's so close. Either candidate can win this state, and this state is really ground zero in the question of who the next president's going to be. Most of the states have very clearly moved in the direction of the Republicans or in the direction of the Democrats. Virginia is one of the big states that's still in play.
Why?
Well, fundamentally, this is a state where John McCain could, in a normal year, do quite well. There are a large number of people who work for the military, retired from the military, and really respect his military background and his international expertise. Unfortunately, though, for John McCain, in 2008, by a margin of better than 5-1, more people are worried about the economy. And that means that McCain's natural strengths in national security, which would normally work very well in Virginia. Virginia is close to Washington, of course, and a significant number of people here work in the military, both in the Washington area and in Hampton Roads, which is a major port for the U.S. Navy. Those people, though, are more worried about the economy. And that means that Obama has an opening that a Democratic candidate hasn't had in Virginia since Jimmy Carter.
Stephen Farnsworth of George Mason University with CBS's Peter Mayer. Now to Katie Couric, part of her series on the CBS Evening News, where she asked Barack Obama and John McCain the same questions, and we heard their answers one after the other. Let's start with this question. What was the last time you fired someone who worked for you, and why? First, McCain.
Well, we had to make a change in our campaign. It was going in the wrong direction. We knew we had serious problems in our campaign, the way it was being managed, and that will be well chronicled in the books that are written after this election. And it was just that we needed a different direction. It certainly wasn't anything that had to do with personal differences.
I have directed people to be fired during the course of this campaign. I'd prefer not sharing that with the public because obviously I don't want to embarrass them. When I see evidence of people who are not acting on the basis of how are we getting our mission accomplished, then I'll give them a couple of warnings, and if it's chronic, they won't be part of my organization.
What would you like to have on your tombstone?
He served honorably, and he put his country first.
He was a good man and an honest man. He was a good father and a good husband. And that he tried to give something of himself to make the world better.
Barack Obama. Before him, you heard John McCain, what they'd like their epitaphs to be. That's our final word in this special report, produced by Howard Arenstein. I'm Dan Revive, and this has been Election 08 Roundup from CBS News. Obama!